Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Any Blockers, the Gamers Net UK podcast about games, labor, unions, labor and games, and why it's okay to call Nazis Nazis. Today we're going to talk about the situation in France regarding the firing of 134 French Blizzard employees. Going to talk about Battlefield 5, both selling Nazi characters but also pretending like Germany's Second World War wasn't actually at all made out of Nazis and that Nazis didn't actually exist in the Second World War, and it's all good. It's a weird thing where they're going head to head with Call of Duty, where equally they at least are attempting to do social commentary, but it's not good. So again, we've got maybe not two biggest anymore, but the two big traditional yearly shooter or like regular shooters just failing at dealing with any sort of political statement or social commentary. In the same way, we've got Hideo Kojima telling us more about Death Stranding, showing us more about Death Stranding, and showing a classic Kojima obsession with weird aspects of Americana, weird handling of women characters, and a whole bunch of other Kojima stuff. Same time, got a former Rockstar designer saying that a Rockstar top executive groped and assaulted him. Let's get started on situation funds. So, Activision firings were made public like earlier this year. At Activision laid off, I think, almost 800 people overall.
It's almost 800 across the world.
Yeah. Around 130 of which were in France. But because of actual good French labor laws, they can't just lay people off like that. It goes through a process, which it appears they've tried to start, but also in French law, you can't just fire people for profit or to satisfy shareholders, which is diametrically opposed to others in the US, where you literally have to, by law, act in your shareholders' best interests. So even if you have like a nice CEO and there's like layers of like what it means to even think of what a nice CEO of a multi-billion dollar company would look like. But even if you're a nice CEO in the US, if you wouldn't lay off people and your shareholders have a problem with that, they could sue you for not acting in shareholders' best interest. So
yeah. So the thing with Activision Blizzard is they laid off about 800 employees for basically economic and restructuring reasons, because they saw a downturn in their stock prices and they were like, let's shake up the lives of 800 fucking people to try and remedy this number.
Didn't work out. Their stock prices are falling.
Still are.
Yeah.
134 of those were in France. And there is a French law that states that you can sort of lay off people for economic reasons. However, it's become apparent that they were laying them off in order to, for economic reasons, as in to affect their stock prices, which isn't valid in France. And you also can't lay people off without severance packages, which they did not do.
Tried not to do.
Yeah.
Those companies try a lot of things and see what they can get away with, right?
Yeah. So now there is a big legal kerfuffle among those French workers because they're basically challenging the layoffs. Not all of them, but like the layoffs are in the process of being taken to tribunal, or at least quite a few of them. Game Workers Unite International and a French union called Force Ouvrière.
Solidaire Informatique.
That one. Solidaire Informatique, yes. Are making a pledge to to start to take these things to tribunal. It sucks because in the US, like, there isn't, like, it is super, like, normal for this to happen, but in France, that's not okay and not the way things are done there. So, yeah, it will be an interesting development, I think. And we'll we've been calling for those workers to come forward so we can actually, like, see what we can do, see how we can help them, and actually potentially take things to a lot of tribunal cases. Many, it'd be great if we just had 134 tribunals going at once.
Yeah, so in France, there's a thing called a plan de sauvegarde d'emploi, which essentially means that there's a process involved that should have been followed, which means that if a company is trying to lay off a lot of people, and there is a union, they need to talk to the union and negotiate stuff like severance packages or how. Like, essentially, the goal of this process is the company makes sure that the people they're going to lay off are going to be fine, that they're going to be able to find a new job. It's the, like, goal of the process. So if there's a union, they're going to negotiate with the union about stuff like severance pay, but also things like, are there opportunities for training? Can they be rehired at a different location in France? So one of the things Blizzard tried to pull in France is, like, say, I can continue working for Blizzard if you go to Dublin, Ireland, or I think Amsterdam, Belgium, which isn't valid. Like, you need to find opportunities in like local in France for people. Otherwise, it doesn't count. But they try to pull it, that kind of stuff. So the process would involve, like, them talking to the union. If there leads to an agreement, then it gets checked by the state to make sure the agreement is, like, valid and lawful and good. And then would have been fine. They didn't follow that process. They tried to circumvent it. So, like, if there isn't, like, a union representing a whole bunch of people in the company, then sort of a temporary union or a employee representative group should have been formed to, like, do the same sort of negotiations with. So essentially, it's sort of an ad hoc union would have been formed just for the purpose of negotiating that sort of plan for laying off people. It didn't happen in this way. And again, they tried to get around it in various ways, like trying to get people saying, you can just work in this other country, which would mean then that the people, like, you know, trying to get around it by, like, suggesting to people that should work somewhere else, so they, like, resign and start somewhere else, and it would, like, get them out of their hair. But yeah, a lot of people were not happy with how that went.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, one important thing it shows is that, yes, you have, like, very different, even, like, opposed in ideology, labor laws in the US and in France. And people in France are not yet, like, definitely finally fired. Like, it's been a process till now where Blizzard is trying to pull it. But even though these laws are in place and actions can be, like, held and how the situation is shaking out, it doesn't protect you from the company trying to pull stuff, right? Trying to circumvent the process of the law.
Yeah, so cusp of it is Blizzard is trying to circumvent the law in France in order to fire 134 people. French law is not as easy as French law doesn't make things as easy as US law to do that. So now it's gonna things are going down.
Also the French.
We encourage anybody who is listening to go support that cause.
Yeah.
Give them...
The French are good at, like, going at getting active, like, going on the street, right? Like, standing up in a way that I don't think is common the same way in the US or UK. And, like, if a company is trying to pull some shit or the government is trying to pull some shit, they're going to be out on the streets, ready to pull out the guillotines and what?
God, pull out the guillotines.
Good and bad, but if some French people don't like something, they're going to go and make their anger be heard. It's good and bad stuff. It's interesting because a lot of those people affected are in, like, marketing, esports, Yeah, when those sorts of non-development roles, which doesn't really matter, they're still games workers. But similarly, recently news has been hitting that a lot of senior people in Blizzard, the US, from similar sorts of divisions related to fact that it's a big esports, big Kotaku exclusive about esports, but the whole esports scene is a very big bubble. Right, there's a lot of money in esports.
Yeah, we've discussed this. Was it last week or a previous episode?
A previous episode we discussed this. But they.
Yeah.
So you've got similar sets of people like leaving out of their own violation in the US, and I also because it's apparently like some of the bosses are like bought in from like television and don't have any idea how to do Twitch sort of twitchy esportsy kind of stuff. But
yeah,
people are leaving, I think, also to a certain degree because they don't want to get hit by a layoff they have no choice over, have no warning of, and then you're just gone. No severance. Or like I think Blizzard may give them a small severance. But it's like if you're in France, you don't need to worry as much. Like even if a layoff hits like they tried to like Blizzard tried to do, Activision Blizzard tried to do in France, you're not immediately out on the street, no healthcare, no severance, no nothing. You're a bit more safe, right? So you don't need to like jump ship. You don't need to be on the lookout and like trying to figure out how the whole global market is going and your company is going and be aware of what's going on so that you can jump ship at any moment. Gotta get more safety, more stability.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to secure like safety for those French workers. And yeah, the thing with esports is like interesting because it shows that a lot of the people who are kind of high up in Activision Blizzard probably realize how insane the direction is around esports.
Yeah. Like, and how many of those...
And they probably, yeah.
How much of the money in esports is literally grant deals? Whereas in traditional sports, of course, there's like merchandising and brand deals, the big thing. But you've got people willing to pay money to sit in a stadium, which is a huge source of income for football, is people being able to buy tickets to be at a football match, right? Fill out a stadium. And not every match is a big match that like completely sells out a stadium, but people are willing to pay a whole bunch of money for seats in a stadium. And the target audience of traditional sports is usually all ages in a lot of cases, but they've got disposable income that they're willing to spend. Again, esports is very Twitch-based. A lot of young people are in it, both playing and watching. They don't have the same disposable income, and they're not willing to spend money for an Overwatch League match the same way they would spend money on an NBA playoff or something. So a whole bunch of the money is based on like the goodwill of big brands like Coca-Cola and Disney. And those brands are fickle. Like you have one snide fuck-up. Somebody says the wrong thing at the wrong time, and the whole brand deal just falls apart, and the money's just gone.
Yeah, I think esports kind of, like, the people at the top of these big companies who are trying to organize esports don't realize how to organize it, and they take it from a perspective of real sports.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, we can just make it like real sports, but you can't. You can have some stadium events, like big league matches.
Yeah, for sure.
Good, and like...
But also, a lot of big league matches, like the Bird's Eye in Beijing are in China, which is a slightly different culture when it comes to that kind of stuff. Then also, like, because the things are both also so international, like, Premier League? Oh my god, I have no idea how football works. But in the UK, it's Premier League, right? Whatever the UK clubs play in.
the UK has several.
There are various leagues, but its point is, there are a whole bunch of matches happening all the time in the UK. Like, if you have...
All the football, all the time.
Yeah, if you have your favourite team and you live somewhat close to their city... Or even just somewhat close in the UK, anywhere in the UK in general, you can just go to a match probably over the year. If you want to go to a League of Legends match, you might need to go to China or somewhere else in Europe, and it's Brexit is happening, and it's complicated, and it's not just as, like, sports. There's the thing, right, of, like, this, like, locality of clubs and teams that doesn't exist in the same way, because, right, it is not the Manchester Club.
it is the Samsung Club, right? The whole identity isn't a place, it's a brand. Again, we're back to brands, which is just not a second like dampener that esports is a weird place to work to be in. And also you look at stuff like esports players just making a whole bunch, like they would make more money potentially just streaming games, being on Twitch, and just doing brand deals directly, like the way Twitch influences do, than like trying to be a professional esports player. And it's probably easier on their health and has better conditions. Not that being a single, not that being like a Twitch streamer is easy, but it is less harsh than trying to be the top esports team. It's a weird place for everybody involved, I think.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of teething problems by people trying to actually monetize the viewership of esports. Advertising advertising is like a way to do it, but it's never going to be like profitable enough that you can really. It's never going to be at that level of like real sport where it's like, cause it's too. It's too international and it's too. I can't think of the word.
Fickle, maybe.
It's too fickle. Yeah. It's
unstable. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not. I think there is a stability.
Is there?
To it,
you think
it's,
of stuff like you've got StarCraft 2 being big, it's blowing up. It just becomes big, and now it's gone. Like StarCraft 2 isn't gone. There's like tournaments and matches, but. Money left the StarCraft 2 scene in a big way. Like,
yeah, that's true. Like, you couldn't really... Like, yeah, it's too fickle because you can... There's new games all the time.
Yeah.
It's like if you are a football fan and every 10 years it's like, Football 2!
Yeah.
And everyone stops watching football to watch Football
2. But also, in the same way, you're a fan of Manchester United, let's say, and they play Football 1.
Yeah.
Football 1. But then, you know... Football 2 comes around, where's Manchester United? They're not there. They're not in Football 2. Or maybe they tried to transition, but it's a different game. It's a different game.
They can't do it. Team's not there anymore. It's like that. It's like esports is just a bunch of people coming together to play a game that they like, and it's not, I mean, it's an organized thing, but it's not ever going to be like the level of organization as pro sports is, because it's not for that. It's not for the money.
Yeah.
It's for, like, the whole thing of why esports was started as a thing is because players themselves thought it up.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing that was invented by companies. So this whole time I've been complaining that it's, like, not profitable, but I love that. I love the fact that it is entirely just led by the people and just, like,
You look at like FaZe Clan
coming together.
It's not profitable per se. Like it's not. There's no long term profitability here, but there's still people making a whole bunch of money. It's just not the people who maybe deserve it.
FaZe Clan can try super hard to be a shitty big corporation and try to monopolize that, but you can never monopolize on that. You can never like. Become the big esport people because you can never like have a monopoly on every single gaming platform, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah.
I say that someone might eventually do that. 2050, everybody's in everybody's FaZe Clan.
I don't know, or you know, UEFA, whatever. Like, but like this weird instability also means that a lot of the time, like, you can't get a monopoly because, like, just. Whatever market you have the mobility in is just going to shrink away and something new is going to pop up.
Yeah.
And so the instability like gives rise to opportunities. But then again, increasing these opportunities are taken up by Coca-Cola and Disney rather than.
Yeah.
Because.
I think esports as a concept is going to become far more regimented and it's going to like. A lot of like big companies are going to be like, okay, there's going to be esports of this new game. We're going to organize like esports tournaments and team structures from the get go, and like that's fine. But it's never gonna take over all of gaming, and it's never gonna like becomes so profitable for everybody, for companies, that it kind of that it ruins the games.
Yeah.
At least I hope so.
Yeah. And also, like, a big difference between, like, traditional sports and esports is also that, like, nobody owns football, but Riot owns League of Legends, Valve owns Dota,
yeah,
Blizzard owns Overwatch and Overwatch League. So it is like, nobody owns football. You want to make your own football league? Do it. People do it. They don't do it all the time, but it happens, right? It isn't just one one company that owns all of football, and whenever you want to do something with football, you need to go through them. Which it's a difference, and I think it's good.
I think it's good.
It's good, but also yeah, it's also bad. It's pros and cons, but yeah.
Yeah. I like the esports scene. I don't really watch much esports, to be honest. I'm like, I'm into any of the games enough that I care about other people playing them.
Yeah, I think a maybe an often explored aspect of esports is, like, you get football. Football is, like, the biggest example of, like, it's just barrier to entry is just so low. You've got so much talent out of Africa, South America. All these places where you don't get esports talent from in the same way, because the person who can afford to play and train to play video games professionally for a long time, that needs a certain privilege. And it's the same way with interest. Like, I don't know exact numbers, but League of Legends and Dota, I don't think are, like, football is big everywhere, and I mean everywhere. Including Africa and South America. League of Legends, not so much, right? It's very Asia and North America focused, and then also Europe, but it doesn't, like, have the same worldwide attraction. I think part of it is a barrier to entry, but also, like, there is, I don't think it's a good thing, but football has this, like, cycle where you got these, all of these stories of young African boys playing football, like, with a really crappy football self-made. Like, somewhere, and then they're getting discovered, and they move over to Europe and play for a national team, and it's all weird, because they're actually from UK or Germany, but who cares? They play good football. Doesn't happen the same way in esports.
No. Yeah, so, as far as League of Legends tournaments is concerned, five out of the eight champions in, like, world champion League of Legends have been Korean teams, no, South Korean teams. The other two have been from Taiwan and China. Only once has a European team ever won, and that was, like, the first year. It's very much it's very much a game centered around people from wherever the game is most popular and, like, most part of the culture. That being said, there are a few European, and also I should also point out that the European and, like, the American teams also just have loads of Koreans on them anyway, because that's just because that's where most of the players are, and that's, like, where you find most of the talent. And it's definitely not a global thing, but then again, neither is, like, American football or baseball.
No, it's not. They're Americans are weird. Like, They make an all-US match and they call it the World Series. It's like, what is going on?
I think we should join. We should just send out, like, an English team.
Also, nobody cares. No, that's not true. Again, I know. We know that really enough Japan is very big on, like, baseball basketball and that kind of stuff.
Japan is now, aren't they?
Pretty big on those kinds of sports as well. And then Canadians and, like, Nordic countries are also big on, like, stuff like ice hockey, but it's, yeah. Like, ice hockey, yeah. Like, esports are closer to, like, an American football or an ice hockey, where, of course, your ice hockey fans in Europe, including Russia, and in North America, but you don't really get ice hockey fans in Africa or South America. Neither do you have the players. Like, I think when people think of sports, they think of stuff like football, when it's really closer to Kabaddi. Do you know Kabaddi?
No, the fuck, what was that?
Your mind is going to be blown.
Oh, I've heard of this, I think.
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
It's big in India. It's sort of a sport where you can't explain Kabaddi. You need to see it to get it. But it's a sport, and it's big in India. But
okay.
On Asia, but not so much anywhere else in the world. But imagine you're trying.
Yeah, I think sports as a thing, as like an just as a concept, are always going to be like this, where there's like they're like regionally popular.
Yeah,
and I think that's fine. And I think video games just need to accept that that is also going to be the case.
Yeah. It's Kabaddi, it's cricket, it's not.
Yeah, Kabaddi just looks like rugby, but minus needing the bit where you have a ball.
It's just a lot of rules. Also, it's called Kabaddi because you literally need to constantly say Kabaddi. You need to constantly say it.
That's awesome.
It's cool. Like, I like Kabaddi, it's weird and fun. It's so weird. It's fun, it's just fun. But, yeah. It's also...
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I discovered it via Japanese anime, so maybe my view is a bit weird. But
it's cool.
Moving on to good old Battlefield V5? FIFA Victory 5?
Battlefield V. We have to just call it Battlefield V from now on. Because that's,
yeah.
They love their Roman numerals.
Actually, let's call it Battlefield Y. Battlefield Y?
Battlefield Y?
Why are you selling Nazis? Pretend they're not Nazis.
Why are you selling Nazi skins?
Yeah.
Is it DLC? No, it's not even DLC. Microtransactions. Well, yeah, it is DLC. It's things you can buy with currency.
Yeah, it's microtransactions.
Also, their in-game currency is just called Battlefield currency.
Wow.
They would have been like, oh, we'll rename this later, and then the game shipped, and they were like, ah, shit. We forgot to stop giving it the working name.
Good currency, oh my god.
But, like, yeah, it's, that Battlefield has these skins for characters that are entirely aesthetic, and you can buy them with in-game currency, which you can get from microtransactions, so they are basically, like, have a monetary value. And they released a couple recently that are, like, one for the Allies and one for the Axis, and they released this one that was just, like, a stereotypical, like, Nazi officer villain.
Yeah. You gotta imagine, think of Wonder Woman. And you remember the sort of evil doctor and like how she had like a plated porcelain face? Like the character there is the character has that kind of like aesthetic slightly. Of course he's not female, because, but it's like you can't go more stereotypical. I see the Prussian influences, I see the Nazi. It's just so stereotypical evil German Nazi bad guy. It's,
yeah. Now, in the context of the game, it makes sense that you want to use the aesthetics of like the actual context that you're putting the game in. It's like World War II, and it's kind of weird and fantastical, and like you're not really following history, but you're still taking the aesthetics and everything else from the historical context, even if there really were no female French, well, there were female French snipers, but there weren't any, like, female French snipers in the Africa Corps. Like, yeah, that's fine, I like that. But it's the dude's a fucking Nazi. You're selling a Nazi villain for them to play.
But they're like, you know, they're like, they're like the modern old white, right? They don't like to call them or themselves Nazis, right? They're like, no, look, this character doesn't even have a swastika. You know, they literally said that this character is not a Nazi. He is simply a soldier fighting for Nazi Germany in the Second World War and having an evil...
Who just looks like a stereotypical Nazi villain.
But he's not a Nazi, right? you just gotta understand, Deck. He's not a Nazi. He's just a German soldier during World War II trying to conquer all of Europe as part of the Axis, which they admit that he is. But it's not... So at this point... Like, they're trying to sell you on the Nazi bad guy aesthetic without admitting that they're trying to sell you on the Nazi bad guy aesthetic. It's like...
Mm.
And also, the character is named after, or was named,
He was named...
Wilhelm Franke. But...
Yeah. It released his character Wilhelm Franke.
And yeah. In the historical context of World War II, there was a prominent person called Wilhelm Franke. He was an anti-fascist resistance fighter who was subjugated by the Gestapo, and his family was killed by the Nazi regime. He was not a Nazi.
just to point out, he actually was killed by the Allies by accident.
Oh, I forgot about that part. Yeah, again.
Yeah. But still,
yes.
he
had a bone to grind with Nazi regime, and he was definitely not a Nazi.
Yeah,
which you can discover by simply typing the name into Google, and you will get.
Yeah, you'd think, right?
Yeah.
So, so they obviously didn't do that. They obviously got fucking German baby names .txt and pick one at random. And they named their not Nazi but a fighter for the Axis powers character dude after this guy.
Yeah.
And when called out out about it, they were like, "Ah, yes, we will rename him."
Yeah. To a proper Nazi name. The resistance fighter names here.
To a proper Nazi name. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a disconnect here. I don't think because you see that in Battlefield 5. Yeah, to a certain degree, that there are some developers who do care about inclusion and diversity and properly representing diverse characters, and also they also care about realistic guns and feels of weapons. Which they make very authentic games, but I think nowadays a disconnect because you've got those developers that focus on making characters look cool and making explosions look cool and making nice, realistic-sounding guns, but then you couple that with monetization, where somebody will now needs to sell you something for your faction, and your faction is literally all Nazis, and marketing, whose goal it is to make whatever they're trying to sell you look as cool and badass and appealing as possible. So, in that intersection, you just get this garbled mess of we're an apolitical game, but also we're trying to sell you Nazi aesthetics, but now he isn't a Nazi, and it's just garble.
Battlefield 5 is interesting because previous Battlefields have basically taken the context of World War II and just taken things from that and been like, oh, this is cool, we'll put this in our game and have a story, and it's telling the story of what happened in World War II. Battlefield 5 takes things to a much more fantastical degree and is there's women in it now, and any soldiers can be that, and we don't really care about what actually happened. We just like the aesthetics, and that's cool. And you're like, yeah, but you can't take the aesthetics and leave the politics. That's not how that works.
Yeah. There's no problem with women in World War II. It was a big fucking war that went on for a long fucking time. All sorts of people were involved in it. But you don't just ignore, imagine you're trying to sell you on, a resistance fighter who's definitely somebody who was in a concentration camp. You know, they've got the barcode tattoo and everything. Or the, number tattoo and everything. And they're like, no. This character was... concentration camps? They don't exist now. We don't know that in our game. He's just, he's not even religious. Sure, he has all this Jewish imagery going on, but he's not Jewish and he wasn't a concept. At that point, you're like, look, this character is clearly dead, but you're pretending he isn't. You're trying to leave all the actual politics of the Second World War, all the actual heavy stuff on the side, but just keeping the aesthetic.
That's the whole problem of this, right? They're trying to keep the aesthetic, but in doing so are trivializing the history of it. I'm sure plenty of developers there have they've done their research and understand the history behind it, but as soon as it comes to the marketing team, they're like, gonna just erase all of the swastikas, now it's not political. because if we come close to making a point, we might lose some of our audience.
Yeah. But literally
not make any points.
Yeah. So if you call somebody a Nazi, the Nazis that buy our game might not buy it anymore.
Yeah, literally. That is literally the reason. So they're like, ah, don't worry, there's no politics in our game. Please buy Battlefield currency to buy elite skins. This one looks like a cool evil officer man. And this one's a woman. Isn't that cool, guys? It's a woman who fights alongside the men in World War II in the African Corps.
I haven't seen enough data character trailers, but also, like, yeah, it's like the sort of like framing of the woman character of Lacroix is like very different than the framing of like Willem Frank, right? Which,
yeah, I mean, that's the point. It's all marketing, yeah. Right? It's all like, ah, this one's cool and she fights for freedom. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is kind of cool, but it's really hollow. Cause, like,
yeah.
There is no backstory here, or at least any semblance of a backstory that the designers and the writers and the artists would have come up with, you told them not to. Because that would be making a point.
Yeah. And we can't make political points.
And yeah, we
can't. We kind of do it. Like, we're making Far Cry 5, we definitely can't talk about America's obsession with guns or white supremacists or Trump. Oh. Well, we can mention Trump in a side mission once, and it's a joke, but we don't actually have anything to say about it.
Yeah, oh god, yeah, so like modern AAA games have this weird dichotomy going on among themselves about like trying their darndest to just not make a point when they write stories set in. They are, so that's the thing. You can't write a story in a socio-political context without making a point implicitly. Like, you can try so hard to be completely neutral, but you cannot. There is always an implicit point to be, like, had. Just because you rub out the swastikas doesn't make this guy not a Nazi.
Yeah. Like, did you see Watch Dogs 3? But also, Ubisoft, very fond of saying, no political point to be made. They made a game set in a post-apocalyptic Brexit world. There is literally no bigger point to make than saying that the world after Brexit is going to be a fucking hellhole. That is a point.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah, oh, God, no. So Far Cry 5, that is another, as you were saying, that's the worst, because they set it in rural America, and they talk, like, the bad guys are like, fundamentalist Christian terrorists.
No, they're not fundamentalist Christians. They're not Christians. They're a cult of unspecified religion.
They just quote the Bible. They're just a bunch of guys who wear crosses.
They like crosses.
The Bible a lot.
Yeah.
They like crosses.
Yeah, they just like the cross aesthetic, you know? They just have a couple of crosses on them. There's like nothing to do with the Bible. You know, just the religious cult that's into crosses, not fundamental Christians or white supremacists. Hardline there. Not the benefit, hard language.
Oh, yeah, no. It's so weird, because Far Cry, the original Far Cry... Wait, is it the original Far Cry?
Yeah, it's a Far Cry 1. Oh, well, 1 and 2 are made by Crytek.
No, I know there is a Far Cry 1. Okay, so the original Far Cry is the... It really was very apolitical. Well, no, you're fighting North Korea. You fought actual North Korea in the original Far Cry. Did you? Fuck, I can't remember anymore.
I know it's in Far Cry 2 you fought, like, in Africa, as a mercenary. Which is where all the Ebola and fire comes in. But I don't remember if it's an actual place in Africa.
So, the original Far Cry is... It's a fantastical part about genetic engineering and fucking being a government agent and stuff. And then they go to Far Cry 2, and they're like... Yeah, it's all just fucking video games. And they go Far Cry 2 and they're like, we can't think of a story, let's just do a retelling of Heart of Darkness. And that's what they do in Far Cry 2, and it's good. Like they do something like actually nice and make a point, even if it is another author's point. And in Far Cry 3, it's the same fucking story again. It's just Heart of Darkness again.
Yeah.
And then Far Cry 4 and Far Cry 5 are literally like them doing the same thing but not realizing that Far Cry 2 was about Heart of Darkness, and so they just deviate from it so much that it's not about anything anymore.
I mean, they introduced Vaas, and people stick to Vaas. Vaas?
No, that's Far Cry 2. That's...
The bad guy. The Far Cry 3 bad guy.
Yeah.
That is killed off midway through the game to be replaced by a different bad guy that nobody remembers or cares about anymore. But people like Vaas, so they're like, Lou, now Far Cry is about charismatic bad guys, apparently.
So it's about charismatic bad guys because the Far Cry 2 and Far Cry 3 had like Vaas and with the Jackal as like the person who is supposed to be the antithesis to your character, who you slowly become, and that's the point. And it's a good story. It's Heart of Darkness. It's good. And now they don't do that. They're just like, ah, we made the previous games where the bad guy was the central point. Let's do that again. We don't know why. People just like it.
And I didn't play the newest post Far Cry 5, whatever that was called, the futuristic post-apocalyptic one.
Again, that one is just the same shit again.
I can imagine it's like, but from what I hear at least, and I've got like two black women sisters as like main antagonists, but they don't really do anything with them. They're just bad guys. They're just like it's like they make nothingness and somebody writes on a whiteboard charismatic bad guy and that's it. Like they don't actually do anything to like they're charismatic bad guys. Like they lack like a philosophy. They lack something to say because they can't say anything. Their bad guys can't say anything or stand for or against anything. So they just cut out patterned paper bad guys with no character. On the topic of Heart of Darkness though, if an really good and very old from the 70s actually like breakdown on racism in Conrad's Heart of Darkness. There's a book by Chinua Achebe, a Nigerian author, called An Image of Africa, where he analyzes the inherent racism of Heart of Darkness, and also he wrote it in part because at the time in like the UK, people just talked and framed Heart of Darkness as the best short story ever written. Racism? I don't know what you're talking about. It's just the best short story, man. Just a good short story. And he's like, there's some context there that you need to talk about when you talk about Heart of Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I read it like just recently, like this year, and it's really good.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out.
Link it in show notes.
So by the time we got to Far Cry 5, Far Cry was never overtly political. They were always like character stories. But then they did the same thing fucking Battlefield did, where they set they set it in a context. There is a context here, guys, and you can't escape from it. You can't just take the it's the same thing. They try so hard to avoid having to like make a point because they take a context for the aesthetics and then publish it. And then people try to figure out why there is no point being made about the context. And they're like, ah, shit, the context comes with, like, baggage, doesn't it? And then they just have to backpedal.
It's about the aesthetic. It's about the aesthetic of having a point, of having something to say. But they don't actually want to say something. They just want to look like there is something there when there isn't. Like, all the marketing, all the setup of Far Cry 5 made you think there was a point to this. But there wasn't.
Yeah.
Because what they're trying to say on is the appeal of a point being made, but they don't actually do it.
No. Also, like, every villain from Far Cry 2 to... Far Cry 2's villain was actually pretty good. I feel like Far Cry 2's writer actually like had something going. But everything from Far Cry 3 to Far Cry 5, the main villains are literally just the fucking... They're just Heath Ledger's The Joker. Just reskin.
No. They're Heath Ledger's The Joker, but you know, it's the meme where they just shorten it to we live in a society where the Joker actually at least, where the Joker at least finishes his sentence. They're just the version where it just stops at we live in a society, and that's it. That's where the Joker stops at Far Cry.
Literally every villain is that.
Yeah.
It's like we live in a society.
Yeah.
They try to base every single game off of it. They base it off the same fucking premise.
Hey, I still stand by that Blood Dragon was actually pretty Far Cry 3.
Blood Dragon was pretty cool, because they picked an aesthetic that didn't have to have a point.
Yeah, See, they were they explicitly picked an aesthetic that's about not making a point. The whole aesthetic of this, like, quirky, funky 80s sort of bullshit action movie is about, this is the aesthetic of not making a point. This is just fun. Which, in my opinion, is what Far Cry games should be about.
Yeah, no, that's what they should be about. I thought Far Cry 2 was, like, did a really good job. It wasn't just fun, though. Far Cry 2 actually,
Far Cry was not just fun. Malaria's not fun.
No. Far Cry 2 actually did a really good job of talking about the context and the pointlessness of, like, warlords and in Africa and stuff. But every game, like, by Far Cry 3, it was just fun. And it worked. But, the writing is just... They've had a weird, turbulent relationship with their aesthetics and writing, and it creates a very inconsistent series. But that's fine. That's a fine thing.
Again, it's so extra disappointing because they try to appeal to you with, like, no, we've got something to say, but then they don't. Like, I can take a game that's just fun, like Far Cry Blood Dragon. That is from the start to finish. You're like, no, this is just a fun experience. Nothing deep here. And I'm like, I can appreciate it about a Far Cry game. But if they are so close to saying, they're so close to actually consciously saying something and making a point, not implicitly, which they do all the time, but consciously and purposefully making the point, but they don't. They're so close to it, but they don't. God damn.
It's like they're advertising, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like in every Far Cry game, you go down this trailer because you're like, oh my god, they're actually going to make a point, and you fight the final boss, and you're like, oh wow, this is going to have some really, like, proper commentary on it, and then the final boss just comes up to your ear and just goes, we live in a society.
And then you shoot him a bunch.
Credits roll.
No, you shoot him a bunch.
You shoot him a bunch, and then the fucking credits roll. Yeah. And you're like, ah.
Yeah, it's probably the person in the least amount of armor in the game, but you can take more than anybody else. Video game bosses, see? Yeah.
Yeah.
A weird way we find a point we can go down two paths when we speak about. One is Hideo Kojima's Death Stranding and his history of, like, a Metal Gear series. Or we can go into, I think let's just go into Call of Duty. So Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare is about to come out this year. And they pitched it again. They're pitching it. It's like, we have something to say. We're gonna do We're gonna continue what the Modern Warfare franchise is all about, which is apparently social commentary. I didn't notice, but apparently that's the history and tradition. We're gonna say something about war. And now let me blow your mind, Deck. Did you know that war isn't just black and white? There are gray areas. Did you know that there might be a problem with the industrial military complex? Did you know that PMCs might be a whole bunch of paid assholes with no oversight?
Yeah.
But also, the bad guys are still Russians, by the way. And yes, it does take place in an unspecified region of Arabia. No specific country, because we don't want to step on anybody's toes. It's just pseudo-Arabia.
I think... Call of Duty is, like, trying to have the opposite problem here, where they actually kind of want to make a point, but they have no clue how.
Yeah. It's all like they, Quantic Dream, who's the guy that made the robot game?
Oh, yeah, no, he's the same thing. He thinks he's making a point.
Yeah, David Cage. Yeah, David Cage. The point is so basic. It's so 20, 50 years ago. Like, did you know that war was America isn't a good guy in the Middle East? It's like, they're like, whoa, this amazing social commentary that we've. It's like, dude, this is some basic ass, like, yeah, like, this is not social. This social commentary from 50 years ago.
Yeah, I guess if they want to be marketable, they have to like do the lowest common denominator of commentary, I guess. Which I understand the reason, but you have to be you have to be like, ah, so we need to make social commentary, but to the level that someone who listens to the Joe Rogan Experience will
But
understand.
they've got the same, similar problem to Battlefield 500. They still like are hard into like the aesthetics of guns and warfare, right? They're still like, oh, you killed five people. Kill streak. Here's a gold gun.
Kill streak. Yeah, no, they.
You can't like comment on the fact that PMCs like kill people unreasonably, but also then be like, yeah, kill streak. Take your gun. It's like it's just inconsistent, right? It's the same with 35. It's some people on the team, I think, or both of these teams, care about making realistic weapons. Some people care about the aesthetics of guns. Some people care about diversity inclusion, apparently, nowadays, and it's cool. But it clashes with each other. The different parts of the game, the different aspects of the game are in conflict with each other and what they're actually saying or not saying, right?
Yeah.
And oh my God. Like the fact that you know. Let me just find a tweet about Call of Duty, Modern Warfare social commentary. Right. This wasn't this long ago. Where are my good tweets at? Can only like be covered once, and I need to repeat it or get it again. Oh, there you go. Call of Duty says. We now have biting social commentary, which in reality means that in addition to playing as invading American soldiers, you can now also play as freedom fighters collaborating with the American industrial complex to take down an unspecified occupying terrorist force and the Russians. So
And the
there are
Russians.
solutions to,
My God.
yeah, literally. So there's a solution to like you playing as Americans, going to the Middle East and killing a bunch of unspecified terrorists and Russians is that you can now also play as actual freedom fighters that fight against Arabic freedom fighters that fight against the evil Arabic terrorists and Russians. And it's like,
Okay.
what? No, that's not what. No, problem wasn't that you could. The problem, what we didn't want is. What okay, nobody's complaint was, no, what you actually want is Arabic people killing Arabic people in the Middle East. That's it. That's all we ask for, man. Like, what? How? What? Ugh. Also,
It, yeah.
yeah. It also, Call of Duty takes place, also, well, that also a lot, takes place in London after, like, terrorist incident or something. And apparently, it's one missionary. They go into a community center town house in London. And you kill a bunch of people, and it's all very bad. They're trying to show you that something happened, and now somebody's looking for a scapegoat, a target. And of course, it's the Arabic community. So they send in some SWATs or special forces into like this place where people just live, and they just start shooting. And apparently, like the people are portrayed very humanly, very like just people just going about their lives in this house where you just come in and shoot everybody. Then it ends sort of like, oh, somebody's reaching for something, and you shoot them and they die, and oh no, it's all good. It turns out they're reaching for a detonator. They're all terrorists. It's good. Like we had some like moral quandaries where we were killing people, but it's all good because we're all terrorists. Oof, good job, everybody. When
So it's fine. It's fine because there's terror. They're all terrorists. And there's. Oh, God, yeah.
like we're gonna make you feel uncomfortable for 5 minutes, but then we need to reassure you that no. You were right in killing all of the people. It's still like, which it's
Yeah. Hey, remember Modern Warfare 2 where there was that scene where you shot up an airport
no
and killed a
Russians.
bunch of
They
innocent
actually
people?
mentioned no
No.
Russians. They're like, yeah, remember no Russians? It was so biting social commentary.
It was there was no commentary.
Yeah.
It was oh no, it was all shock value, and it was like no.
Yeah, I'm harking back to the mission where you like play as a drone operator and like aim Modern Warfare and to shoot a bunch of people on the ground. When
Yeah.
how you do, well, not how you do this, but how it should be more like is like instead of just saying oh yeah, we're going to show you that warfare is asymmetric, and one side has way more money and resources, and it's the invading American force, instead of just redoing an old mission where you shoot down people from like a drone. If you do want to show the multiple perspectives, you can show that, oh yeah, actually we had bad intel and we shut up a school. And I don't want to do a pure shock value of kids died, but to just show the context that, yeah, they've got all this tech and all drones and the PMCs, but we just still constantly fuck up and kill civilians. And it doesn't matter if we're the good guys or the bad guys, and we probably aren't either of them. We still just fuck up constantly. And you've got like incompetent PMCs running around. That some are evil and money hungry, well, most are, but they're also incompetent. They just fuck up. Like, it doesn't matter if you've got good intentions, if the like singular soldier was patriotic or not, doesn't matter. Because they still kill people and fuck up this region. But that's what they're saying. What they're saying is that, you know, maybe you shot a kid by mistake, but it's all good because the kid had a detonator. Not sure if that literally happens, but that's the sort of thing they're going for, where, oh, maybe you shouldn't have shot that kid. No, it's all good. They're an evil kid.
I just remembered that, like, every villain in Call of Duty is always a Russian guy, too. And they never have, like, there's never, like, actual reasoning behind what their actions. It's all, they're always just, we live in a society as well.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, with Russia, they're going into, like, because you could do, even though it might be a stretch, you could do like the presidential election. Like, you could think about the Russians less as, well, if you need to have Russians as bad guys, which I guess you need to, because apparently a lot of ideas, you can still like explore aspects like, man, how do, like, framing the Russian invading force not as the like stark total contrast to the American invading force. But think about stuff like, how are both the Americans and the Russians trying to influence local politics? How are they trying? How's the Russian troll farm propaganda machine affecting? How are they trying to affect this region? To show less as like
that'd be a fucking sorry, that would be a fucking great mission in Call of Duty, where you have to like take down a troll farm.
Yeah, and it says about, and what you discover is that it's just a bunch of local people that need a job, so they're posting shit on Facebook. And it's not, right, it's not about, oh no, it turns out they're all terrorists and get a detonator, but no, it turns out they just need a job, man, and some income for the family, so they're posting shit on Facebook to influence local elections. And it's less about this, oh, they're the evil terrorists and the evil Russians and they're here, and then you come in and you shoot them up, and it's all good. And it's more like, how what is this power play, this like struggle between two invading forces on the backs of the like local native population? But they're never gonna discuss or explore that, because they're like, but it again, because the native good freedom fighters are just like teaming up with the American force to take down the Russians.
Of course, because that, if they were good guys, of course they would. That's why would you not?
Yeah,
it's fucking weird.
I just can't get over fake.
I really liked the single player of this is an interesting. So I really like the single player of Arma 2 back in the day.
Arma 2, huh?
Because people don't really talk much about the Arma single player, but it's interesting because it's actually used. It was designed as a training device for real militaries, right?
Yeah,
and it involves. It still has like a stance of like, oh, obviously your side is the good guys, but it involves factors that are in play that like soldiers might find in play, and it involves like factions that you don't actually know are on your side or not often.
Yeah.
And it's cool because you're like, ah, yes, this is actually a thing I'm learning about, like, modern conflict. Is that's a thing to think about. I've learned things from Arma where I have learned nothing from Call of Duty.
It's again, it's like all the things, they're just saying they're going to do something, but they're not actually doing it. And it's like, I just could see all the things that occurred to you, how they could explore stuff, like how you as a, how the patriotic American soldier arrives in a, oh no, it's not actually a real place, so it's not Afghanistan, it's Uzbekistan or whatever, and he arrives there. He already sings about everybody being a terrorist, and you could just do a story, it's like the first mission, so you come there like, ooh, you're like always trigger happy, and like, you know, you could training mission or whatever, where you learn to shoot, and it's like, ah, oh, it's trigger happy. But then they arrived there, and then you just met a couple of people, and they're just like, dude, chill. Like, not everybody's fucking terrorists. It's just normal people. Like, you don't need to be on edge all the time. Like, they could, like, do this whole thing where they, like, open up with the main character that has all the expectations and stereotypes that a lot of people do. And then they're, like, bit by bit, deconstruct those. But they're not gonna do. You're gonna, like, say something like, no, not everybody's a terrorist, but then you're gonna get attacked in, like, a patrol mission or something. Right? But then, like, everybody you encounter in the game will still be a bad guy.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Let's not expect Call of Duty to make real commentary anytime soon.
Well, might be surprised.
We can dream. Yeah, we might actually be surprised. It might actually be, like, actually good and have things to say.
I think it's going to have...
Like, we can only hope.
I think it might have things to say, very small things to say, every now and then. But then they need to do the big blockbuster action moment again. So, I do think that on that team there are certain people that do want to make specific scenes that do have something to say, just like surrounded by all the classic Call of Duty bullshit, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay, silver lining is they actually are trying to do something now, whereas before they literally were not.
Yeah.
So we can be happy about that. It's like the only thing I'm worried about is that they completely missed the point, which I think is far more likely than I like to think about, but, like, we'll see.
Yeah. If let's continue down this streak of, like, problematic commentary in games, and it's like about one of the few Arturs, I guess, in gaming, about a person who... about somebody who has something to say, and he has so much to say that he won't shut up about it, and it doesn't make any sense, but you keep listening anyway. Hideo Kojima. Death Stranding.
Mm.
Featuring Hartman and Die Hartman. Yeah, Hartman. Heart, like the heart in your body that pumps blood. Hartman. But also Die Hartman, like dying really fast. but also characters such as Fragile and Mama, the two female characters.
Why does he do this? Why does he name female characters just like adjectives?
Yeah.
And just nap.
Also,
like,
of course, this.
Noun.
Of course, also, the most of what you see of Fragile is her being like sexually assaulted by. One of the bad guys that are called not demons but homo demos or something. I mean, it definitely means demon, but he cut a letter out of the word somewhere. Also, of course, the main character Sam Porter Bridges, because it's Uncle Sam in America and he needs to transport things from A to B and he needs to build bridges. Therefore, he is called Sam Porter Bridges.
Oh my god, I just realized that. I realized that's so bad.
Saying iconic lines full of insight and biting social commentary like, America's fucked. You're the president of jack shit. Oof. Okay.
Now,
yeah.
In terms of games making a point,
mm-hmm.
Kojima's previous work, like Metal Gear Solid, in my opinion, does a better job at making political commentary than any other video games ever. Because he actually does.
Maybe not all games ever, but he explicitly does commentary, right? Like, all of his plots involve governments, conspiracies, politicians of the highest degree, corruption, war crimes, unless the suffering of people affected by conflict. It's always a part of his games.
Yeah, like, in Metal Gear Solid 5, there was child soldiers and a lot of dialogue about how child soldiers is tragic and bad.
And they were badly handled, like, in my opinion, but yeah. They were there.
No, it was badly handled, but it was at least addressed.
Yeah, you don't see that in an Ubisoft, like, game or a Call of Duty or Battlefield. Never.
No, like, if it was in Call of Duty, they'd be like, oh, there's child soldiers, and they wouldn't talk about it. They'd just rely on the audience just being like, oh god, child soldiers, that's so shocking. But, like, Metal Gear Solid at least, like, had a lot of discussion of it, which is good. And, like, Yeah, no, like I think the Metal Gear series was great with dialogue and just great talking about like war as a concept and like geopolitics, and it's so on the nose sometimes, but it does try.
Yeah, I think one of the things I like the most about his framing of war is that war is never, like in Call of Duty and in Battlefield, war is always patriotic and heroic. And it's about doing good, being the good guys and doing the right thing. In the Kojima game, it never is. War is always about conspiracy, profit, personal gain. Nobody ever does war for any, like, he just says, like in Kojima's world, war cannot be done for any valid or good reason. It's always done for bullshit reasons.
So I think, the thing is, like, Kojima is actually kind of woke when he like talks about certain topics, but
He's not
like
Galaxy Brain, but he has.
yeah, he ain't got yeah, but he understands things, and it isn't beholden to add like a marketing department,
Yeah, like
which is good.
compared to like the Division, where the White House is in the Division, as is like a secret government force of hidden civilian sleeper agents. But it's all good because they're there for when shit goes wrong and shit has gone wrong, and now they're the good guys. Everybody who doesn't immediately give them all of their resources and tries to resist is the bad. It's like in a Kojima game, Kojima is not just gonna use the White House as like a set piece, but not comment on it. If you're in a White House and it's a Kojima game, man, you're gonna fight the president with a rocket launcher or some bullshit. Like, he will not just stop at like using a space or like a vague concept. He is gonna hit you on the nose with something concrete about it.
Which is good. So in terms of Death Stranding, we can get his fucking like his approach to women still leaves things to be improved. But I like that he's designing a game around the fact that like there's still conflict in it, and there's still like a lot of beating people up, but it's about primarily building bridges apparently, which is cool, and connecting
Yeah,
people,
transporting shit.
and there's no death, there's no actual failure state according to his own talk about it.
Yeah.
It's just you go to the under the
Underworld.
you go to the Upside Down from Stranger Things basically, and and I'm like, okay, he's actually approaching interesting concepts in this.
Yeah, so let's just say that it is 2019 and Hideo Kojima is releasing a game about a failed America that failed because people build walls and exclude each other.
God.
Like, can't be more on the nose
This
than that. Like, it doesn't even get any more like just glaringly obviously political, like just bam. America failed
Well, yeah,
because they
that's the
built
thing
a
though, but
wall.
that's the thing though, but the Kojima is actually exploring the socioeconomics of the current world and doing it in a way that's actually implicit in how it's doing it, but he's explicit in doing it, which is the exact opposite of what every other AAA title is doing. They explore the aesthetics of the world and none of the socioeconomics, or try their hardest not to.
Yeah. Like any other game maker, and it would be a whole bunch of walls, but nobody would ever say the word wall because it's a bad connotation. But if you were saying, hey, nah, I'm not going to even show any walls in this trailer, I'm just going to speak about them.
No, yeah. I'm sure you tried to put a big wall in there
Holy.
somewhere. There's gonna be a scene in the
Got
game,
to be
right?
walls.
I swear to God, there's gonna be a scene in the game where you're exploring and you find the fucking remnants of the Mexico border
And
wall.
Samuel Bridges Porter is going to say, "Mr. President, tear down this wall." Because that's what he
Might.
likes. That's what Kojima is
That
like.
sounds like so fitting for a Kojima
No, Kojima is also one of those
game.
guys that's good, that says, like, "Did you know that Death Stranding is phenomenon where a whole bunch of whales just appear on the beach and then just die?" And you're gonna be like, "No, I didn't know that." And he's gonna be like, "See, I am a genius." And like, I mean, I didn't know that, but it doesn't mean you're a genius.
See, I'm a genius. I named my game aptly about an implicit reference to something that is about my game, I'm amazing. And I'm like, well, actually, Mr. Kojima, you are compared to every other AAA title, but... yeah.
I like the Metal Gear series. I didn't play most of them, mostly because the controls are terrible. But I played Metal Gear Solid 5. I think gameplay-wise, Metal Gear Solid 5 was one of the best stealth action games I ever played. But it's one of those games that I nowadays I just cannot go back to because I just facepalm so horribly about so many aspects of that game. Quiet! You know, it's quiet. There's so much of stuff about how African people are represented. There's so much stuff there. But I still, like, Kojima is also one of those few people who can be like, depending on how you view it, either he like has stuff that just has a very, very buried and deep meaning, or stuff that's just there to be cool. Like, because to me, right, he has a burning on fire space whale in Metal Gear Solid 5. Why is it there? Because it's cool, man. Like, Kojima also puts stuff in there just because it's cool, and he's not like, this has. At least it's not open. Yeah. Like, this has some deep meaning that this whale is on fire, and there she's like, nah, it's a cool fire whale. Take it.
Yeah, no, Kojima definitely takes a bunch of drugs and is like, oh, I saw this cool thing, guys, we have to put it in the video game.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a really good picture of Kojima with Mads Mikkelsen and Norman Reedus, and they're like smoking weed. And Kojima is like pretending to smoke weed in the picture, like he's got his fingers up to his mouth as if he's doing it, but there's nothing there, and he probably does. But I realize why. It's because he's a Japanese citizen and he'd get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
if it was, like, proof that he did.
Yeah, they would retroactively pull his games off the shelves. Pen is very hard on drugs.
Yeah, but he probably does. But he's probably like, I should probably never... Like, it's implied, but he's like, I should probably not have any paper trails to prove that I did this.
Yeah.
So he's trying to look cool, but it's just looking like a nerd. Just like, hey guys, look at me hanging out and hanging out with Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen and smoking. Aren't we cool? I'm not actually smoking, though, because that would be illegal.
Yeah. It's yeah.
Speaking of which, he has a weird obsession with both of those guys.
Just one weird obsession? I think there are more.
Did you see the other tweet he did where he was like, here's several renders of Mads Mikkelsen in various different positions for all of you.
Yeah.
It's like weird. He like clearly has a thing going on.
I mean, I'm going to for sure play Death Stranding because it's a Kojima experience. It's Kojima experience, and you don't... As much as I hate the stereotype or the concept of an auteur and a whole bunch of shit that he says and does, you just don't get this raw, unfiltered bullshit anywhere else in the same... Your Kotaro
really
games are close. Like, stuff like Nier... It's close, I think.
Yeah, Nier's great.
I also love Nier, by the way. So I love these. I also love Swery games, it turns out. I fucking 4D, Dark Dreams Don't Die. That was my jam, man. I hate that they canceled that shit. But there are very few sorts of people who are allowed to get away with making games like this.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate thing about the games industry, is like, everyone should be making games like this. Games should be like thought of as more of an art form where we have like room to experiment, but it's so beholden to marketing in the Western sphere that only ever happens with small scale indies.
Yeah, like it's
which is really sad.
I mean, people do creative games, right? It's not, but they're not allowed. I don't have the resources to do them on this sort of scale that Hideo Kojima works on, where you have literally like a dozen.
Yeah.
Where Hollywood actors and directors, like, all in this project, like, so, like, only Hideo Kojima is allowed to get away with having, with smoking weed with Mads Mikkelsen and Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
Making a game with them.
Can you imagine if, like, Activision tried to make something like Metal Gear Solid 5? The marketing department would have immediately been like, can't make commentary.
No child soldiers, but these.
Cut.
No amputees? Why is everybody an amputee? Phantom Pain? What are you talking about? Because you were like, did you know that phantom pain is the feeling of a lost limb? You're like, no, yeah, I didn't know that.
We did.
And he's like, I'm a genius.
I'm a genius. But no, the marketing department would literally be like, ah, our metrics show that 29% of our test audience found the concept of child soldiers to be difficult.
Yeah.
Can't market this. And this would... Yeah. It would never happen.
Actually, now that I think about that, I actually want to know what sort of non-able-bodied people think about, like, because the medical side of patent pain, there are a whole bunch of, like, people with amputations and that kind of stuff, so. Hmm. I actually know what people think about that. Maybe that wasn't too badly represented. It probably was, though.
I think Kojima actually does try to do his best with representation, like,
yeah,
MGS5 had like characters of every race, and it was there was a lot of talk about like language.
Language thing was interesting, I think.
Yeah, because they had a character who was a Navajo talker who and it's all about like the concept of the language of Navajo and the concept of languages and what they mean implicitly. And it's like actually like semi deep shit.
Yeah. I think with the able-bodied stuff and ableism, I think maybe I could see people feeling like if you look at a character like Miller, lost two limbs, and he's just constantly angry about it, and he can't handle it, and he can't deal with it, and he's always sad, and he never moves on. I think that might be a better just a character that's like constantly broken and damaged, like this, the sharing people as being permanently damaged and broken. When people can really move on with their life, and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah,
like I think that might be bad, but also boss has a cool fucking rocket arm, so there's that.
Yeah, but well, you could make the argument that boss and Miller are two different two examples of people who took loss differently, and like. Boss actually like powered through it, whereas Miller just stayed.
I think in a way Miller feels the phantom pain and Boss doesn't. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's saying. Like, okay. With Battlefield and Call of Duty, you cannot have these conversations because there's no implicitness to any of the narrative, and there's no like depth to the narrative for you to even try to speculate.
Yeah. That's for sure.
But
like again, not everything that Kojima says is cool and good, but he says shit explicitly.
Yeah, he says shit,
and a lot of the time he says shit, and it's slightly like, ooh, I'm not sure about this, but he does say it. He gets the way of saying it.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm curious if I'm curious. I really want to know if what's the word if. What the fucking name? Death Stranding. Yeah. I really want to know if Death Stranding is going to pass the Bechdel test.
Oof!
I bet it does.
I bet it doesn't. I mean, I look at characters like Hartman, this sort of tech bro dude. I just see him just being in Octocon ripoff of like he loved somebody, but now he's just forever sad, and it's like. I sort of feel like I can see this whole. Feel like I can see this whole character arc already in front of me, but I really I just want to see what he does with the only black character that I saw, which is Die Hartman, who wears a mask. I mean, multiple people wear masks, but what is?
We'll find out. We'll find out.
We might be probably going to be disappointed by some stuff and amazed by some other stuff. Hideo Kojima. Another company headed up by two people who sign themselves to be auteurs is Rockstar and the Hauser Brothers.
The auteurs.
Oh, yes. However...
Whose narratives are literally just South Park, but it's a video game about crime.
Hey. Did you see that the Rick and Morty people were selling their game? Versus Universe using Jake Jontron.
Yeah! That's just because they just know him. It's because, like, Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon just know people on that, like, sphere of YouTube. Yeah, it was weird. It was really weird. I don't know how I feel about Justin Roiland.
Rockstar Games. Rockstar Games.
Rockstar.
Geronimo Barrera, Vice President of Product Development. Apparently, sort of an asshole. He has left Rockstar and self-published a... No, wait. No, somebody else. Different... No, sorry. Different... But, there was apparently a whole bunch going on between a particular X-game Rockstar designer and this VP of development or production who accuses that VP of I've seen a couple of incidents and things, but in general just being a goddamn asshole and a harasser.
Yeah.
Also like a known quantity in the company, like people know that he's a shitty guy.
Yeah, he had a reputation for screaming at people.
Infamous, I think is the word used to describe him.
Infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people spoke about him to HR and HR's like, yeah, he's a VP, so we're not going to do anything.
I feel like we've had this conversation in a previous
episode. It every week, to be fair. Like every week.
The industry sees this shit every fucking week.
Uh-huh. What do you got?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's abrasive and volatile. Which are not necessarily good adjectives you want to have people describe you with. Yeah, so he did a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of people... but very specifically, he is said to have assaulted this particular game designer and Rockstar inside of a nightclub. And yeah, also of course indecently touched people and a whole bunch of other stuff. So
yeah.
No, classic asshole executive behavior. This game designer apparently wrote a book, a self-published book about his experiences at Rockstar, although he used pseudonyms for being involved, but people know, like, you can get who he's talking about. They didn't, like, super obfuscate things, he just used different names. But yeah, like, and you can look at this as just another story about Rockstar, but which it sort of is, but like the more you, it's like you haven't even scratched the surface of companies such as Rockstar or Riot. Like, every time, like you just uncover some other wildly known like asshole, harasser, sexual harasser, discriminator somewhere at the company, and it's like,
yeah,
and it's all like known for years on the grapevine, but nobody's publicly talked about it. And
yeah, no, it happens in every bloody industry, right? It's like you've seen this in the well, we are the entertainment. See this in like
Me Too, yeah,
the film and TV industry. Like, yeah, it's literally like a Me Too.
Yeah,
and the fact of the matter is, it's not something that's just about film and TV and the performing arts and whatnot. It's everywhere. It's a workplace issue. It's about asshole VPs who get way too who have no accountability.
Yeah,
because they are VPs.
Yeah,
and they are the people with the money. It's,
I think it's slowly scratching away at the. I mean, this is literally us too, right? Games industry isn't some magical place where everything is great.
No.
I feel like for a long time, everybody pretended like that's the case. But it's just...
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a common thread in stories like this. Is they're in industries where everyone thinks everything's great.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, no. It's Hollywood syndrome. It's for, like, for everything.
It's
full of people who are super entitled just by virtue of they are there and they think, oh, because I am here, because I am working for this company and doing this thing, I'm the greatest motherfucker in the world. I can just grope people all I want.
Yeah,
we need to carry on the momentum of stuff like the Me Too movement and continue to like try and build union representation.
Yeah,
throughout the industry, because it's like that is the answer. And I think it is a positive trend that is happening throughout all of these industries, because like this shit went just completely untalked about.
Yeah,
like even like a decade ago.
Yeah, I mean, using us doing like social commentary. Yeah, the games industry is a wider societal trend of like looking at these sorts of issues and talking about these sorts of issues. And
the fact that this guy came out and said to Kotaku, like, "Hey, I want to talk about this book and this long eight pages I wrote about my shitty experience as a rock star because I feel like I can now."
Yeah.
Is good. It's a good thing.
Yeah, games industry is pretty big, but so another duality I see a lot is that people say stuff like the games industry is a small place, which I think in a lot of locales is true, but it's also okay. Let me rephrase this: like there are only a few people at the top. It's a limited number of company owners and VPs. So that part is true, but like on average, like newest IGDA survey, well, like IGDA survey from last year, on average, in the last 5 years, people have worked at five different companies. So, and people move countries. Yeah. Like, how do people, I think, well, also move countries? So people just hop company to company to company. And it's like this saying that it's a small industry is half true, of half like, so you better not say anything because it might come back to haunt you, right?
Mm. I mean, we can only hope that the threat of it coming back to haunt you isn't the only thing that like stops these things from happening, because it shouldn't. We shouldn't have this. Like, it's good that these things are coming back to haunt them, but like, we shouldn't create a society in which like that is the deterrent.
Actually, did it the other way.
We need to create.
Actually,
we need to create a culture where shit just does not happen.
I actually meant it the other way around, not for the harassers and assholes, but more for the victims.
Oh.
In a way that, Harvey Weinstein saying, like, yeah, you could tell people about me abusing you, but I am Harvey Weinstein, so. And I know everybody in Hollywood, so you're fucked.
Oh, yeah. So, I think now it is coming to a situation where coming clean isn't going to come back to haunt you because the media and public opinion is now completely on your side.
Yeah,
that's great. That's I think that is going to be the main driving point for the transition of making things less shit.
Yeah,
it's the main driving point for like actually affecting change in these situations.
Yeah, which
in
some ways it does, but also in some ways it never did. In a way that people just stopped working for a company and moved on a lot of the time. So, but then they like the thing, right? Even if they moved, like this person left Rockstar and he wrote an anonymous book, but even there he like obfuscated names and shit. And I think some of it is like legal, like sender stuff. But like people even after people switched company and switched country, there was this like looming threat of like, this is a small industry, better not talk about it. Better keep your mouth shut. You don't want it coming back to haunt you. Even though this happened in the UK and now you're in China working on completely different people and something completely different.
It's the worst because it's like, oh no, I don't want this to be associated with my name, even if it's like, even though it's like nothing that was my fault.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was a bad thing that was happening. I don't want a thing that is unfortunate that happened to me to be associated with my name because. It's like if you get hit by a car and you're like, I can't tell anyone I got hit by a car one time because they might judge me for being a bad fucking street looker around her.
See, yeah, I mean, yeah, the more crushing would be, right, like, victims of sexual harassment going up to sexual assault in rape, like, not being comfortable ever speaking up about that. Because, especially in the US, it, like, shit gets just victim blaming is strong.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That, like, people are afraid of victim blaming, and they're afraid of people who try to affect change and try to, like, actually challenge the establishment.
Yeah.
And I think that was a huge reason unions were not a thing for such a long time in the games industry.
Yeah.
Probably because, like, tech people didn't get what it was, but they're also, like, to this day, we encounter people who are, like, afraid of putting their head above the parapet because they know that, like, there is a stigma around the idea of challenging the way things work.
Yeah.
And they're afraid if they actually do that, that it could negatively affect their careers.
Yeah.
And I think it's good with unions as well as with whistleblowing to keep doing it to show that we don't burst into flames.
Yeah. I mean, we're both publicly elected union executives. Members of the executive committee of a union. Yeah. Publicly known so.
Yeah.
Didn't self-destruct our careers. Fuck, I joined.
Nope.
I just joined. Wait, can I? Oh, yeah, I see. I just got accepted into, like, weird BAFTA Games Crew stuff. Like, and that kind of stuff. Like, the thing, like, it's not like, literally nobody at BAFTA is like, oh no, that guy is part of a union. They're like, that guy's part of a union. If they even know, like, whatever, who gives a shit, we're BAFTA. It's like, literally, like, it's not like it doesn't matter at all, because it does. It doesn't matter in the you're immediately fired way.
Yeah, no.
But the thing is, but that's still the fear that people have, right? Because they don't, because nobody's speaking up, and it's all like this. They're alone, right? There are few people doing it and saying it and openly doing it. That there's a whole bunch of fear of the unknown, which is justified a lot of the time, but also I think maybe misplay, like. Like you fear the unknown so much that you miss the real actual threat, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it's just what we gotta keep doing. Is we gotta just keep making it known, making it not an unknown.
Yeah.
And I think the trend in the industry and in this culture is and wider culture as a thing is heading towards making things more known, which is good.
Yeah, for sure. To some degree, like all of this is good, but also, I mean, this was. What's the CK? I think it was New York. Let me speak about the story. But also, again, like a whole bunch of the attention is on like the US. And so after Rockstar stuff was UK, then even the almighty Jason Schreier, I think more or less it was like, I tried to get any sources in Rockstar India. Couldn't find anybody who knows what's happening there. Like, literally no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
So, again, like, people are speaking up, and I think a lot of, like, actual victims of abuse are speaking up, and those tend to be more marginalized people, but, of course, the more marginalized and abused you are, the harder it is for you to speak up.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about Rockstars saying, oh, no, from now on, we're allowed to talk about working conditions, work hours. And the people who felt comfortable speaking up were the people who had were reasonable ones, right? Like the people who felt safe and secure in their job and at Rockstar, they spoke up and said, okay. And people who didn't, not so much. It's a hard thing, but I hope I know that unions can help with that. The whole point is that you're not alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a, did I write that for develop, I think? I got asked the question of like, what would a unionized industry even look like? And I'm like, can you give us any real world examples? I'm like, I can. Have you looked at SAG-AFTRA? The big voice actors side? Can we look at Writers Guild of America unionizing games journalists and writers? Like, have you have you looked at any unionized industry and how you have not collapsed and turned into burning flames? That's what it looks like.
The examples are all there.
Yeah.
Just gotta point at them and keep trying to emulate that.
Oh, did you see? It's so good. Did you see, like, there was a big Guardian article, I think, about how Finland, Helsinki specifically, is solving their homelessness crisis?
Oh, yeah.
What's the solution, Dick? The incredible solution to homelessness.
You just give them homes.
Give people homes!
Just give them.
What?
Just give them a place to live.
What? Houses? That's impossible, Dick. What do you mean there are more places that are unused than people being homeless? That's simple. It's not only does it solve homelessness, it's cheaper. It is cheaper to just give people homes for free than to try to take this any other way. And especially in places such as London and the Bay Area, where you've got like properties just being derelict and empty because it's just cheaper for property owners to not have people live there, but to speculate on value or other stuff like that. Like, are you looking like, the marginal tax rate in the US? And like, dude, it was the US fucking of A that had a 70-75% marginal tax rate in the 30s, the 1930s, Second World War times. Like, you did it. And then you went back. But it's like, it's again and again and again. It's like, how would you ever do it? And like, either people have done it before, or people are doing it over there right now, and it's working out perfectly fine. Like, but
yeah,
it's so often with a whole bunch of problems and crises and social issues. It's like this concept of like, how could we ever solve this? And like, just like that? Now we couldn't ever do that.
Just do it.
And like, we couldn't ever do it like that. That like over there and over here and these people are doing it. Like what? Are you talking like what?
Yeah.
The favorite argument is we don't need unions because industry is so great.
Oh, the industry is so good.
Yeah. What you're saying, so it couldn't be better? What? It's just basic, like this, like if this idea that like this goes back to like gamblers being so fucking great, but then if you bring up unions, some people are like, oh no, it's actually so incredibly great that it could never be any better, so therefore we don't need to improve conditions. And like, oh
yeah, I mean, every these are always like the same weird ass arguments against unions. It's like, oh, we don't need unions because the industry is great. And you're like, what about all of these things that are really bad? And like, nah.
Yeah.
Ignore those.
Yeah.
What about all the groping?
It's how.
Yeah.
It's okay. So I'm not queer, but I think it is widely known that during Pride Month, a whole bunch of corporations are like, yeah, rainbow colored flag, isn't it great? And like, I want to talk about maybe your hiring practices, discrimination, YouTube. You may want to talk about how to make money off like far right extremists and transphobic people. We're good. We've got a rainbow colored flag, rainbow colored logo.
We support gay rights now that they're legal.
but only to the legal crime. Look at this.
Like gay rights to its the legal extent.
Look at this rainbow colored like merchandise, man. Like, okay, was it made by queer people? Are the profits and revenue going to queer people, queer creators, or queer charities? Nope. They just go into our pockets. I'm like, great fucking, it's fucking great. It's nothing better than to celebrate pride with paying money into the pockets of cis white dudes. It made rainbow colored things.
Yeah.
Love it.
Love it.
And that's it for this week's episode of Any Bloggers. Where you're listening at night, during the day, at work. I hope you could learn something. And see you soon.
See you soon, guys.